Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This week, Ryan picked the movie Empire Records, along with One Punch Man, Season 1, Episode 1. This week, we have Jonathan Charney, James Hello. Stevens, Ryan, It's Raining Men, Preston. And here's the description of Empire Records. The employees of an independent music store learn about each other as they try anything to stop the store from being absorbed by a large chain. I love this movie, like probably more than I honestly should. For me, it's a strong 5 out of 5 because it's
wow.
The weirdest thing is it's such a point in my life. It's like reliving my childhood to a certain degree.
It speaks to him.
It does.
Don't let the man get
Yeah, the only way you could possibly give this movie that kind of a rating is if you identified with it, like, as the target audience. I mean, definitely nostalgia, but this, to a certain age group, this movie definitely speaks to a very personal point, you know, that we all sort of saw these mom-and-pop places go down over a period of time or get absorbed by the giant conglomerates, the Tower Records of the world.
This blockbuster that got shut down by Netflix and Redbox.
This movie couldn't get any more 90s if it tried.
No, yeah. Hell no. But it had a good sensibility, like, to it, much in the same way that, like, High Fidelity did, where it had such a unique voice to it that despite the sort of nonsense of the movie, It was greater than some of its parts. You know, this one was more of a parody because you had like the Rex Manning characters and the quintessential depressed artist and things like that. But a pretty bitchin' cast for the 90s though.
Yeah, I mean you had the classic speed freak. You had the woman at Ill Repute,
Renee Zellweger, she was hot at this time.
She's actually probably she's probably the biggest star to come out of this. Liv Tyler's done some things.
I was gonna say Liv Tyler for sure.
Robin Tunney, how do you say her? She went
Tunney.
Went on later to do movies like The Craft, which when we were kids, every woman who was goth that I knew saw that movie and pretended to be witches.
Yeah,
it was quite hilarious, but.
It got annoying real fast.
And Coyote Shivers, who I always forgot he was in this movie, and every time I hear his name, I always have to look him up.
He goes, "Huh."
So
we haven't.
Yeah,
had Ryan.
Well, he was sort of more of the musician than the actor. I think he did a couple of things acting, but more or less like the LA punk scene.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna let Ryan go next. What do you give it?
You know what? I was kind of going back and forth. It's a 3. It's a solid 3. It's got its faults for sure. Just, you know, clunky storytelling wise, but for nostalgia purposes alone, did so much. And like I said, the unique voice is so much to do with it. You know, the singer, not the song. You know, for a lot of this movie.
This movie is one of those rare movies to me that is an amazing product of its time. It's one of those movies that you could never reproduce and get the same feeling.
I'm going to go with I don't know. I mean, my only downside of this one is, I mean, we had Clerks and Airheads come out the year before. And so this one just kind of fell in with those guys instead of more like a standalone or Clerks, which hadn't been done like that before and spoke to a lot of people that were hanging out in front of the mom and pop shops and things like that. And then you had Airheads, which was the nostalgia, the rocking, you know, the rock and roll type of era.
This is going to sound kind of strange. I think Clerk and Airheads, you could, in the same vein, they're the same comedy wise to me. I think this one's different because I think it has a completely different flavor to it than
it's got
than
its
the
own
two.
For sure. I'm not saying that, you know, that it just, I'm just saying it kind of got lost in the mix of these movies coming
out.
Yeah,
no, you're absolutely totally right. That's a hell of a good point. I mean, the time that it came out, probably the reason it didn't do that great was it had all these other sort of unique movies. Everyone kind of coming off the heels of like the Breakfast Club and the John Hughes movies, which I'm sure most of those were very heavily influenced. I know Clerks was.
Yeah.
In all honesty, a lot to do with teenage angst and shit.
Yeah. In all honesty, I don't think this movie, giving it some thought, I don't think it would have done, I think it does better today than it did back then. Because one, you got the nostalgia factor of going to your mom and pop record store. You've got, you know, the different varying degrees of people who you were friends with who kind of fit each category. From Guar to this. So I don't think, I think
it would only do well with
people our
age. No, I actually, not, you know, like 25 and below.
I think it would a little bit because it would be like, oh, this is what it was like to actually go to a record store. Because I know because the records coming back, the newer generation is starting to kind of want that experience that we grew up with.
I mean, they're kind of wanting the Amazon.com version of that experience. I mean, back in the day, you know, along with video stores, people used to hang out at record stores and argue music like all day long. I mean, again, to bring up High Fidelity, it was sort of a better movie.
Yeah.
But this one went into more of like the type of people who work at a record store versus like the customers and the one guy's experience.
Yeah. I haven't given my rating yet.
Okay,
so try to get back to with all these reasons.
Shit, James, come on.
I mean, I want to give it a 4, but I think it's got to be at a 3.5 right now. And maybe I'll switch it at the end of this. But, you know, it's kind of on the verge of a 4 for me. But, I mean, like we've said, it's definitely an era movie. And the reason why we say that is because, as Ryan just said, I mean, most of these purchases are done on Amazon, Fleabay, Overstock, bullshit like that. But, I mean, I still got to think that Dimple Records up here still does a pretty good job with what they got. I don't know. Ryan, what is your kind of record, music, movie, bookstore type of thing? Like, what do you guys have down there? Is it still, God, I can't think of the name of it.
I'm gonna break your heart because they closed down Amoeba.
Oh, okay. Damn.
Yeah, and it was the iconic record store. It was still privately owned right up until the end. It never went corporate.
Damn.
And it was always that place to go in and, like I said, sort of argue about music.
Yeah.
You know, we had a record store down here that's still kind of going, a little mom and pop place called Pooh Bahs. They mostly deal in vinyl these days, which is actually cool. It's making a comeback.
Yeah.
But not a lot of places down here, you know, Amoeba was like the place that they're probably sort of parodying a little bit.
So,
you know, that type of place that's so easy to go corporate, you know.
So Amoeba was kind of like the last holdout type of thing. Because up here, Dimple is still pretty
big.
Yeah,
totally. It had a vibe to it.
Dimple's pretty big around here, like Berkeley, the Bay Area. You've got Rasputin Records off of Telegraph Avenue, which is a fun place to go to. That sucks. I would say that I like High Fidelity. I think the difference between this movie and High Fidelity, I think this movie's more fun in a lot of ways because it's just, this movie doesn't take itself seriously. I think High Fidelity takes itself seriously in a good way.
Yeah.
Well, and it takes itself very, very smartly, you know, and this movie takes itself very, very stupidly, if that makes any sense. But it does it because the characters sort of demand it. It's that young, like I said, teenage angst. But it wasn't trying to be smart like the 30-year-old guy who still works at a record store. It was the kids who music means everything in the world to them.
Yeah.
And they wanted to sort of share it in their own sort of unique way. So it's a slice of life, you know, with these particular characters.
Which is hilarious because they never really talk about music in this entire movie. There's bits and pieces
they did a little bit here and there, like, but not.
My favorite scene, even my favorite scene as a kid, is I've always been big into death metal, and there's that scene where Mark put metal on, and that one guy went up and, you know, used the lighter to destroy the disc.
Yeah.
Like that's hilarious. There's bits and pieces in this movie that are just like wow to me. And
yeah, moments like that are just great, you know.
And I'm so old that it's like I can picture who that was. It's like
right.
I'm one step away from
the guy gluing quarters to the ground, you know.
Yep.
That was hilarious.
And I swear that's where Steve Jobs got the idea for the iPhone 7? 6?
Why?
The one that he glued to the street in Amsterdam.
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah, he took, I was like either iPhone 6 or the 6S or whatever.
He took it, brand new,
when it came out, and then he glued the bottom with like Gorilla Glue or something and stuck it on the street. And then there's like multiple videotapes and pictures of people trying to pull it up off the ground.
I'm thinking it would have to be before the 6 because I don't know if he was alive.
I can't remember when he died. But yeah, it was the... Release before that.
I will say one of the reasons I love this movie is the nostalgia factor for me in movies is really big. If you've been watching the show at all, you'll know that. For me, it's big because I grew up watching this a lot with HBO or, you know, TNT, one of those. It was always on. It was pretty much this and Shawshank Redemption. So I've watched this movie a lot. So it's always been a blast. And the cast in this movie, I don't think there was anybody in this movie who was poorly cast. Rory, and I'm sorry, I've never been able to pronounce this guy's name right. Rory Cochrane? He played Lucas. He played Speedle on one of the CSIs. I've always liked this guy, especially in this movie, how he plays the perfect... Whatever character he's playing, he's a perfect fit for it. I still haven't quite figured out what role he really is trying to play, character-wise.
There's the movie reviewer in you talking.
Well, I'm just like I could point like bits and pieces of okay, maybe you know emo here and this here, and you're like, he's not a stereotype. I mean, he's a '90s stereotype, but he doesn't fit anything enough to say it's
it's this or that.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just there.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the fact that they have characters like that because at the time there was a lot of people that were just like that in real life. So I think they nailed kind of the different characters and how they interact and everything pretty well. I mean, you got the Deborah chick, as John was talking about, or Robert Tooney, that chick that, just shows up at work and goes straight to the bathroom. Screw everybody. I don't want to talk to anybody.
But by the way, what's up with letting like a teenager play with high voltage neon signs?
Why not?
That's the part that always made me laugh. Cause I don't know who too many people that would have let me play with insanely high voltage as a neon sign is.
Well, that's actually one of my sort of favorite things about the boss. He's more of a, kind of a mentor than anything else. You can tell he definitely used to be one of those kids, and
you can
kind of gives him enough rope to kind of play around a little bit, and but still sort of tries to run the ship.
So question for you: in the beginning of the movie, he grabs the $9,000 or $10,000 or whatever. He wins. Would you have stopped after you doubled your money? Because I would have. I would have pocketed the money.
I would have pocketed 3/4 of it and then played it again.
You think?
Exactly.
You think he would have pocketed the original amount and just play with the amount he won?
No. You see, I would have done 3/4 of it, and then that whole portion is mine. if I make it work with, a quarter and I double it up or whatever, that just goes into my pocket for a finder's fee.
Because I'm thinking
right?
I'm thinking
You got to wet your beak a little bit.
Yeah, I'm thinking instant $9,000. Pocket that, put the money back, life goes on. And you've got enough money that you can buy something other than a turtleneck. That guy looked hot through the whole movie. Those sweaters are not very comfortable, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. I was actually looking up the boss, and I haven't seen him in anything very recently, because he was a pretty decent actor at the time in there. He's in the new Annabelle.
I definitely remember seeing him in a few things. I went through his IMDb. I didn't really recognize anything that stood out. Like, oh, that guy.
So... I'm sorry. Now I know why he looks so familiar over the years. And from 2002 to 2009, he was in the TV show Without a Trace.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder I don't know him, because I don't watch that shit.
He was in The Client.
He's been in quite a few things, and so is Debbie Mazur. But she was mostly in Joe Pesci movies.
None of them have really taken off besides Renee Zellweger. Robin Tooney did a little bit, not a whole lot. And Liv Tyler, more for the Lord of the Rings, I think, than anything else. She's done bits and pieces here and there, but
never
not a whole
liked
lot.
Her. I mean, there's just something about her acting that I always felt like there was always something lackluster, except for this one.
See,
as far as I'm concerned, this is her best role.
See, that's... No, I actually agree with that. But that's why I thought she was perfect for Lord of the Rings. You needed kind of an actor who was, like, distant. She played the perfect... She played the perfect
Armageddon with Bruce Willis, too?
Yes.
Yeah, and one of Ryan's boyfriends.
Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
But no, this is why I thought she was perfect in Lord of the Rings. You need somebody who's like an actor who's not really there as she's acting.
All right. I think it could have just been all the drugs that her dad was on when he stuck her in her mom.
So.
Classy.
Tracy.
So after
contact eye, right?
after this show, James is going to have to get an anatomy lesson. We'll have to tell his mom. I still give this movie a 5 out of 5. It's a fun movie. I actually own a copy of it. I've always loved it. So, I mean, 5 out of 5 is strong. Does it deserve it? Probably not, but I got to throw in a little fun factor for me. So, James?
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't been convinced to go above a 3.5 on it. Like I said, I mean, there is quite a bit of good stuff about it, and I think if it had either come out at the same time as the ones that I mentioned, you know, Clerks and Airheads and... others.
If it came out in like 96, like enough time so people weren't still like talking about Airheads and Clerks, I think it would have done better. I think it's just poor timing when it was released. Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a Pauly Shore movie.
Thank God.
Yeah, really. I might move up to a 3.5 because, I mean, really, scene by scene, It is a funny, entertaining movie that the characters do hold up. The setting itself doesn't hold up and is always going to feel dated now.
Yeah,
That's the nostalgia.
And I'm sure the same thing with the music and things like that. Original song by Coyote Shivers, though, at the end there.
Know what I really want to see? 20 years from now, I want to see somebody watch this movie and wonder what was with the scene where the kid was eating the brownie. Because we grew up with Gwar, so I knew what they were even when I was watching this originally. But you're seeing this 20 years after the fact and wonder, what was that? And you get to go, oh, they were a band-ish.
good old young ass Ethan Embry.
Yep.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/realflixreviews. Do you have a movie you'd love us to review or some movie news you'd love us our spin on? Please let us know. Please do that. You can also catch us on Podbean, iTunes, Stitchers, and more. So, we're going to switch over to One Punch Man Season 1, Episode 1. So, James, batter up.
So, I heard about this when I was first came out, and it was one of those, I mean, I kind of not into anime as much as I used to be like 5-10 years ago, but the first episode of this one, it's hilarious in its own fact, and I love the fact that he's actually looking for a legitimate fight. It's hilarious.
I will say one thing, though. If you're if you get turned off by animation style, this is one of the ones that might turn you off on a little bit. It's not quite as bad as Berserk 2016-2017, but it is enough that it might drive you nuts in the animation style.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is it's, for me, it's not the entire episode or series that is the bothersome. There's just a few bits and pieces here and there.
It's what they do with his face. Yeah. There's a few things here that it's like just done in anime for years.
It is a direct parody of anime, though. I knew nothing about this show until I was scrolling past it on Netflix, and it kept trying to recommend it to me, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't watch a ton of anime. So I look at the description, and like, oh, this looks funny, you know. And I love the Japanese humor, especially Japanese deadpan. Nobody does deadpan like Japanese.
No, they don't.
So when I started watching it, I realized like, oh, this is so awesome and so self-aware.
Yeah.
And I mean, right down to every little trope that everyone kind of loves but doesn't think too much about when it comes to anime.
Yeah. No.
When it's put through this guy's point of view is hilarious.
Not every trope. There's things they do in this that I've never liked, like certain facial things they do. There's certain things that have always driven me nuts, and I've been watching anime probably longer than I should admit.
They have to do all of those sorts of things, you know. My favorite thing is the over exposition of the bad guys of what they're going to do, and then his reaction to everything of just like, oh, okay, well, I think I need to go to the grocery store tomorrow, and then just punches somebody and walks away like, well, that was boring.
Like, later on in the movie, later on in the series, people randomly attack him and like, I'm going to kick your butt, and he does like a little thump, and they just explode, and he's like, well, you made me late to go shopping.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what he gets bent out of shape over.
Just the little things.
That is, you're kind of stopping me from going home, and I kind of want to go home. It is a really, really funny show, though. And actually, the classic sort of anime stuff going on around him is like legit sort of anime. Nobody does destruction like the Japanese either. You know, ever since Godzilla. the '50s and Godzilla.
And
you know,
Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Just
what we need, more hate mail. On the episode that I was...
Well, no, look, he's not wrong. I mean, that was more or less the impetus for Godzilla, you know?
Ladies and gentlemen, his name is James Stevens. If you want to give him hate mail, please, below the episode on YouTube, type whatever you want.
Die, you fascist Nazis.
Wait, you called him communist earlier. Make up your mind.
Yeah, same thing.
But yeah, anyway, I really like this show a lot.
I like this show. I love it for the mindless destruction. There's part of the story in this television show I literally don't care about. I usually dig anime for the story. You can take it or leave it. The fighting scenes in this are the best part. I will add a caveat to that. The stories they tell in the midst of the fighting is hilarious because it's like shopping or this or that. So that part's hilarious. You can take the rest of it.
Well, and everyone else around him is so serious, and they're all playing the usual sort of anime kind of thing. And the setting they put it in this sort of like nondescript sort of future world metropolis kind of thing where heroes and monsters and all this stuff. And he's just kind of like wandering through like, look, I just kind of do this for shits and gigs, you know?
His sidekick is hilarious too, by the way.
Yeah. You get to know the sidekick in episode 2.
So,
and he is hilarious.
So, ladies and gentlemen, next week is for Theater Pick, and we decided to do something we've been talking crap about for the last 6 months. We're going to pick the Tom Cruise Mummy movie, and so expect lots of talking crap about the little one. Do we have a TV show?
Yes, we do. We have Midnight Texas pilot episode.
God, that sounds like a porn.
Like Dame Chocolate.
What's that?
Do you really want to know? Go look it up on Urban Dictionary.
No, not that. Not really. So, ladies and gentlemen, jeez, I gave Empire Records a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 3.5 out of 5. We are doing...
Midnight Texas pilot.
And ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston, thank you for watching. Goodbye. We'll be right back.